Hey everybody, welcome to Snapcast. I'm Alex.
I'm Jerry.
And I'm Rob.
So this week, as always, we're going to do some news and stuff, and then we're going to talk about brewing strategies. So, first up, what have you been up to? What's new, Jerry?
So, I've been jamming more games with red-white vehicles, getting better with it. As y'all saw, I uploaded that that sweet video where I had 8 seconds left on the clock in Standard League. Yeah, deck's good. I found new little technology. Red-green energy aggro was always tough, and we put Repel the Abomination in it just when they... You know, they feed into the electrostatic pummeler for 32 damage, and you're just like, 2-mana instant, nah, we're not going to take any damage. Blow out their hand. Other than that, getting ready to switch jobs once again so I can have a more consistent life and be able to do more with myself.
What do you got going on these days, Rob?
Well, I went down to Orlando for the regionals for Standard. I ended up running the red-green energy deck, and... I don't know what it is. I can't play it, or I just have the worst luck with it, because I went 1-4 there, dropped, and then I've done 3 leagues with it and have gone a combined 2-13.
Yeesh, rough. That's brutal.
Yeah. So, I would like to think I was a little bit better, but maybe not. Maybe it's just not my jam. So I've swapped over. I've been playing a couple different things: Marvel Works, Colossus, just. Feeling out all the new decks in Standard, because the great thing is they're cheap. They are dirt cheap, and it's fun.
Oh, yeah. I think it's more than just the deck. People are now aware of it, that it exists. So, you know, there's some tech out there for it to fight against it. So maybe you just need to change your board plan a bit. Maybe get away from the Infect style that it is and just go aggro.
Yeah.
myself... did not go to regionals. I had family obligations, but I will be going to a PBTQ this weekend. Nice. In Standard. Be playing some blue white control. Hopefully, I enjoy my day. I mean, I know I'm going to enjoy my day. Whether my opponents do or not is another question.
Hey, man, you get to play Torrential Gearhulks and Dovin Bonds and all that good stuff.
No Dovin Bond. Man, not even in the 75.
Dovin Bond is the one card that actually, one Planeswalker from the new set that actually hit top 8 in Pro Tour. You sure about that?
Yeah, I'm sure about that.
All
that
right.
That card just doesn't do enough. Yeah, still, in my opinion, doesn't do enough. I'd rather have Gideon to close out games.
Gideon up.
Yep.
Can't argue with that game plan either. I think both plans are very reasonable. As long as you're playing 4-mana Planeswalker, I think it's right.
And then also in Modern, I changed over Modern decks for a little bit. I've been playing Lantern Control. And went up to a local game store on a weeknight for Modern Night and got to play the Lantern Mirror. That was fun.
Yeah.
No, that is not.
It's like beating your head against a brick wall.
We were the first ones done because we knew when to scoop. we knew when the other one had to lock in.
Sure, I guess, yeah. But
we weren't messing around. We didn't make each other play it out. Like, we knew. Like,
did you actually win the match?
I did.
Yeah.
We because like neither one of us had played the mirror before, and he's actually taking the deck to Milwaukee this weekend for the Modern Open. So we were doing a lot of talking and stuff about it, and we figured out. And game one is particularly noticeable, where he only had bells as his milling option, like deck control option, and I had a Bell and a Codex Shredder. So I drew a Pithing Needle and I just named Bell and locked him out so that way I controlled the draws and then did what Lantern was supposed to do and just made sure he drew nothing good.
Yeah, Lantern doing Lantern things. I mean,
yeah,
with Bobby getting back into it and all, can't wait to have him back, by the way. You've all convinced me. Like, at this point, I think the Snapcast deck is Lantern control because... just convinced that's what we're here for.
I mean, I don't think we can get Rob and Chris on that deck.
Oh,
I was going to say you won't.
Oops, sorry there. We got you.
I mean, I think we could force Chris to play it.
Oh yeah, we could force him to play it. Absolutely.
I mean, I think Chris would be more willing to play it than me. He has talked. He wants a control deck to try so he can expand his portfolio of decks. Me, I.
Rob, we're 4 out of 5.
I will say, I've looked at card prices already. I've already priced out the deck and thought about it. That's probably the max I'm going to go.
Come on, Rob. 4 out of 5.
I don't know. I just like seeing the lights go out in my opponent's eye.
What, like, as they die
the moment
starvation
they realize that they actually
50?
Can't do anything, and they're just like, oh, and you're like, yeah.
I like it when my opponent has a tear in his eye, and he's like, control doesn't exist in modern.
No, my favorite is the question of, how do you win? Oh, I've already won. I won 10 turns ago, but you haven't realized it yet.
I mean, now it's just a matter of, do I mill you out, or do I mill myself until I hit a win con? And that's just personal preference. That's all that is.
But yeah, that's what's going on with me. So we got some things to talk about in Standard, though. We had a pro tour that we can touch on, but WotC with a big announcement this week. It's changing Standard rotation back to the way it was.
Yay!
I am so happy about this.
Thank you, WotC.
I'm actually one of the ones that's not happy about the change back. One of the reasons is just it shows WotC just can't stick to anything. Like, they've changed so many things in this year alone, and then kind of, like, flopped back on them that it just... I'm losing a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the letter they put out, or the article they put out about it, it seemed like it was having a huge effect overall with the Magic community, with new players, casual players, and things like that. And that's... I want to say we touched on that back whenever it was first announced that they were going to go to a 3-set rotation and do it every 6 months.
Well, yeah. With them, their main objective is to sell packs, and FNMs and packs are what make them the most money. And just from experience of going to different FNMs in different parts of the country, you know, I used to be accustomed to seeing 20 to 30 people FNMs. These days it seems to be 10 to 15. Everywhere I go. Now, granted,
and that's
personal,
a good night for some stores.
Yeah, it's a good night for some stores. Like, we need... I think it's more of an FNM attendance thing, where they do make... That's where the most of their money is, and this affects the 99% in a positive way, and it affects the 1% in a negative way.
See, I don't know. I think the low FNM attendance is not from this. Because for one thing, we haven't even had an 18-month rotation yet. We just never got one. It was going to be spring, was going to be the first one. We never even saw this in effect to see if that's what's driving numbers. So, like, already basing it on something that hasn't happened yet is already skewing your numbers. But on top of it, most of the low attendance was cons was just such an expensive standard format with fetches and things like that, that it drove a lot of people away.
Yep.
And, right. You know, that cons into Oath. Then Oath was also not a good format. It was Rally all the time. You were either playing Rally or Siege Rhino, and that was it.
Mm-hmm,
and then
absolutely.
After that, we got Collected Company deck. You know, Bant Humans or Bant Coco was just the best deck in Standard. So, like, it was three, you know, Standards in a row where, like, it was either really expensive or just a broken format. So, like, that drives players away.
Yeah, basically,
like,
we
if you don't want to play Bant Humans, you're not going to play that Standard.
Yeah, I mean, basically, we haven't had a good standard format since basically Theros Block, and I can
right,
agree with
and
that.
And this is the first, and see, like, it's going to skew their numbers even more because this standard is good. Like, we're going into a good standard. It's very diverse. It's cheap again, so standard play is going to pick up again. They're going to be like, "Oh, these numbers went up when we announced this." No, the numbers went up because of Kaladesh, because we finally hit a good standard. Like, I actually am still a fan of the 18-month because it helps with these broken formats. Like, when there's just the best deck, you know, Bant Humans or whatever, it'll rotate out faster. So it's less time we have to deal with a broken format.
Okay. And I think what really drove the people away, and touch on the topic that we hit last week, was, you know, the standard was unhealthy. And they saw what happens when you have an unhealthy format. And I hope they learn from it. That's my biggest thing on this.
Yeah, for sure. But, like, once again, I think this is jumping the gun. I think they should at least wait until the spring rotation to see what happens and see how the numbers actually were at the first rotation, rather than doing it now when I don't think it directly correlates to this rotation.
Okay.
Well, here's another thing you have to take into account. With 18-month standard, people's collections get devalued quicker. You know, Gideon and Ulamog are the two most chased cards out of battle, and they were starting to lose price because they were going to go out next spring. Well, now with us going back to the old way, we get another 6 more months with them. So they're not going to lose their price. It gives the casual guy, the casual FNMer, the opportunity to keep his collection, to continue playing, so that he may trade into another deck. that's the big benefit I see from this.
I mean, the counterpoint to that, though, is yes, they maintain value longer, but like the value is just not there right now in the standard anyway. Like, you're talking about dollar cards. Like, they're going to stay a dollar for an extra 6 months rather than going to a quarter. Like, I just don't see the necessarily the value of that.
Exactly. Nah, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. Another key thing to think about is we just came out of basically two different broken standard formats with Rally and Collected Company. In two-year standard, almost positive that Rally would have been banned at some point. And Collected Company would have went with it. Because they rotated out.
I mean, I don't know about that. Like, they hit their natural rotation time.
They did, but like, if we were basing it, you know, based just if the old system had stayed, they wouldn't have broke up Khan's block. Like, that would have made no sense. So we would have been...
You're saying if they would have stayed with the three block. Like, I think that's a whole other issue of just going to two blocks. Like, I'm fine with that. I'm more worried just about, like, the 18-month versus 24-month rotation. You know what I mean?
But do you think people want to deal with 24 months of Smuggler's Copter? I mean, let's not ignore the elephant in the room.
I mean, that's what we got now. That's what they're giving us. That's why I like the 18-month. Like, I like the quicker ones because, like, that it won't get as stale. Like, I do like playing the same time because you get to know the deck well, and that's when you do really well with it. But at the same time, like, I get bored playing the same deck for, you know, 12 months or whatever.
Hey, man, that's a grind. That's something you just got to get used to. At least that's how I see it.
I mean, I still like to enjoy Magic. You know what I mean? Like,
nobody.
If I'm playing a deck I don't enjoy to win, it's like this is the same thing. Problem I had with Bant. I played Bant Humans. I ran in a couple PBTQs, and like I hated every minute of it, but I was still top eighting every one of them. But like that doesn't make it enjoyable for me.
Nobody likes fun. No one wants to have fun. We want to win. Nah.
I mean, I want to win, but I also want to have fun.
Yeah, me too. I know I'm going to sound like a heathen saying this, but the red-white vehicles deck, man, that is fun to me. I do enjoy it.
I mean, it's all right. I've played it against it enough times in testing that it seems fine. Well, like, I could pick it up.
There's going to be a few naysayers out there that say, oh, that deck's not fun. It's just you play a few things. But, you know, the decisions you make with your scries, the deciding factor of whether you activate your Dipala or not, depending on keepable hands, whether you keep the one lander with the Thraven Inspector, Dwarven, the Toolsmith, the Toolcraft Inspector, whatever it's called. You know, that's a
Exemplar.
Lot of... Yeah, Toolcraft Exemplar. A lot of things go on. The deck has a lot of thought for an aggro deck, a lot more than normal. And I think we're going to be fine with Smuggler's Copter format, in all honesty. It was in 59% of the decks at Pro Tour, which is still a high number, but it's not quite dominating. What do you think about that?
I mean, it's fine. I was right. Let's point this out. I was right about the number of Smuggler's Copters in the top eight of the Pro Tour.
Yep, you were right. I was wrong.
It's like I knew it wasn't gonna dominate. I knew it wasn't gonna get hated out because it's still just a very good card. But like, obviously, it's not the be all end all. Like, the finals was Control Mirrors, which I also called that there's definitely 100% a control deck in this format, and it definitely showed that it is a very dominant force, too.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Two different control decks on top of that. That's the best part.
Yeah.
Like
no, I love it. Torrential Gearhulk. I knew that card was great.
That card shot up in price, too. Like, wow. It and Aetherworks Marvel.
Yeah, it went from, like, 7 to 30. It's great. And I already have my copies, so I'm not worried.
Yep, you're winning. You've won. And our standard winner for this week is Alex. Tell us about your Torrential Gearhulk increase in 300% pricing. Or 400%. I can't do quick math
like
that.
That's fine, but I'm not going to sell them, so I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
Like, I'm not selling them, so I don't know.
Nah.
If I had extras, like if I had, you know, specced and bought like 20 of them, then I would have been excited, but...
You know Wizards hits a home run when a card is good in standard... And Commander. That's a home run hit right there.
I mean, or it just means Wizards really likes creatures with abilities right now, and that's all it is.
Yep.
I don't know. What were your thoughts on the Pro Tour? We can kind of start getting into this now. What's your thoughts on the Pro Tour, Rob?
I was actually surprised by the number of Aetherworks decks that people were able to get, not just in the day two, but, I mean, the variety of them. You had not just Temur, but you also had just straight blue-green. You had red-white. It was different variants on this deck, and it was beautiful to see. And I put the stat up just because I was really drawn to it. 63 out of almost 300, so you saw 20% of Aetherworks in the day two for the Pro Tour.
Yeah, but even then, they got held down pretty good. Like, it was I forgot the number. I think it was like 29%, if I'm right, just off the top of my head, of the meta of the Pro Tour overall. And then, I mean, it kind of held that. It actually lost a little percentage going into to day two, and then none of those put up, like, particularly strong finishes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's just, I mean, it was nice to see. It's definitely going to give more to build upon if there is a little bit of room for it. And then, of course, with the other popular decks, too, red-white vehicles, we all saw that. The red-green energy, red-black aggro, and then black-green delirium. Those were the top five represented in the day two meta.
Yeah, I actually really liked Ifro's take on the black-green of just try to get as consistent and as aggressive as you can.
Yep.
But with the Catacomb Sifter, just between Catacomb Sifter and Server of the Conduit, he just always wanted to turn forward the Protoss Gear Hulk as often as possible.
Yeah. Were there any copies of the red blue Affinity deck out there?
No, I don't think.
No one was.
I can't remember.
No one was trying to jam Metalwork Colossus.
I don't remember seeing any of it, but I'm not saying it's not there.
Okay.
There were a few. There were a few Colossus decks there on day two because they did a deck tech on day two for the Metalwork Colossus deck.
Oh, sweet.
I remember one of them being more controlling and had like fumigates and stuff, but I don't know how I felt about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually, the more I think about it, I'm like, I don't like that.
No one likes that.
It's just an awkward feel.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you want to be using things like Cultivator's Caravan and stuff, and then like having creatures to crew them, but like also killing all the creatures. Like, I don't think that's what you want to do.
No.
So, to sum up what I think of the Pro Tour, I think Wizards R&D has got to be pleased with themselves. They've managed to actually balance a standard format. We have, you know, consistent different variations of a red-white aggro deck. We have the Temur Aetherworks mid-range combo deck. You have the black-green delirium deck. And we have two different control decks that are options. Good format? Yes, no?
I mean, I said it was going to be a good format, even with Smuggler's Copter.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, fantastic. No, I think it's looking
it's great. Good, but it's also like each deck is super powerful. Like what the Marvelworks deck is doing is like really strong, just cheating in Ulamogs and Immercools. And then the Colossi decks are just cheating in, you know, 10-10s. And
yeah.
Like, Copter decks are doing Copter things.
having the energy is not even an issue with the Marvel deck. Like, you will have the energy. It's just a matter of, do you have the Marvel? Like, that's scary. That's scary how good that is. Like, just Marvel is all you need. And the deck does itself. All right. Sign me up.
Yep, and we had cheating issues again.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, right.
This video went viral. It was a modern PPTQ, and what it was is Jeskai versus Tron, and this guy went to fetch, and he ended up topping a Crumble to Dust, and as he shuffled then, he held the Crumble to Dust up top and didn't offer the cut to his opponent, and then went straight to his turn, and he did the shuffling and everything throughout his opponent's turn, so as soon as he set the deck down, he could draw.
Oh, that's cute. Uh-oh. That's cute and obvious and everything.
Yeah, and then later on, too, he calls out his opponent. He's like, yeah, you need to shuffle your deck, and then I get to cut it. You know, it's how the game is. Then what?
Yeah. I mean, sure. This was a small issue in the Bloomington area here too, because Jeff Hoogland streams paper testing for things every now and again, and they were doing modern the other day, and they had a guy on. It was like his first time on Hoogland's stream, and he was actually like, you know, doing the thumb trick where he was thumbing lanes to the top and stuff, like on a stream just for testing. Like, he was just in such the habit of doing it. Like, he's just testing and cheating. Wow. Like, come on.
Whoa. That's pretty shady. Not going to lie. That's dirty.
I mean, the guys on the stream put out a little thing saying, okay, we're cracking down on who we let on and things like that. And, like, they don't condone it. You know, one of those kind of things.
I heard the guy that got caught at the PPTQ, he ended up, he got his invite to the RPTQ revoked. Did he not? That's what I heard.
Yes. Yeah, his prize is suspended while Wizards investigates it.
Does second place get it?
That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to at least get it to the second place guy who's cheated.
Absolutely. I agree with that wholeheartedly. Give the Tron player his invite. However, really, that cheat, I mean, I guess if you're in the zone, you're in the zone, but always shuffle your opponent's deck if he's going through it. Long story short, really.
Yeah, sure.
Even if you're in a finals game, so the clock isn't against you, you know. Let your opponent shuffle, you know, wait until he's done, then take his deck shuffle, then continue with the phases as is. Actually do things in order. It'll save you so many issues in the long run.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, this has been a thing before, too, like Grand Prix or Opens. I can't remember if it was Open or Grand Prix, the one where Brad Nelson fetched a Ghost Quarter.
Ooh, yes.
Comes to mind.
Yeah, fetch a Ghost Quarter, so, like, and get away with it. Yep.
Yeah, but it was on camera. Like, it's the same thing. It's just not a PPTQ final. So, like, I want to know what, like, that kind of sets a precedent. Is like, is Brad Nelson too famous to, like, go back and say, hey, no, like, this isn't right. Like, you obviously, like, cheated here. Like, what's the precedent that's going to be set here? Like, is it now just if any PPTQ is recorded or streamed and you get caught cheating, like, are you just, you know, screwed, like, no matter who you are or what?
I mean, if you're caught cheating, you should be screwed. That should be it. You know, punishment should fit the crime. If you're cheating people out of an invite for an actual tournament, which then gets you into real money prizes, man, I'm all about, I might be a little extremist in this, but I'm all about people going to jail for this type of stuff, especially once you get to Grand Prix type level.
You're condoning the rape of cheaters?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. You know, jail time, people go to jail for cheating in a casino, and I get that Wizards has been trying to keep Magic away from the concept of gambling, but at the same time, we're playing for, you know, 10,000, 20,000, however many thousands of dollars to get to them top tables. There's real money involved, and you pay real money to get here. You pay for your hotel room, you pay for your expenses, you pay for the trip, whether it's gas or a plane ticket. I think people should be going to jail for this type of stuff.
I think that's a bit extreme.
Yeah.
I'm fine with, you know, revoke the prize and a banning, but, like, jail is extreme. It's not like he stole money. Like,
well, okay, what about a cheater that did win and actually got the money? Wizards doesn't have legal authority to go back and take the money if it's in your bank account. That would require lawyers, lawsuits, and everything. Like,
I mean, that's one of those, like, I guess you get away with it. Like, sure, you keep the prize money, but then, like, you get banned, so you can't win anymore.
Sure, but I still got big money. I don't, I guess.
I mean, this is a PPTQ. It's not big money.
Sure,
you probably got, like, a box.
Yeah.
You got, like, a box of boosters. It's like, haha, sucker.
Of course, of course. You know, obviously, if you're only playing for a $130 box, then, yeah, no one, you don't go to jail for that. No one would go to jail for stealing something like that. You would be banned from the location, and you'd probably be given a ticket, and you'd have to pay some amount of money, you know. I think the law should come into play somewhere. How about that? Is that reasonable?
I mean, it's, what law is it breaking, Jerry?
Good point.
Exactly.
Good point. Because, like, Wizards of the Coast has taken Magic, and it's not actually gambling. I get it. Maybe they need to say it is gambling, you know?
No, they would lose so many venues on that if they declared it gambling.
And also, like, then what, you'd have to be a certain age too, like, then the kids couldn't play it.
Yep, 18 years old to play, since it's gambling.
Sure, but what kids, yeah. I mean there are a few, don't get me wrong, but, you know, how many people are there over the age of 21?
Like 16. He was at the World Championships this year, like.
Sure,
You had that 13-year-old get second at a GP. You had another kid under the age of 15 who top aided a GP. I mean, they're out there, man.
All right.
And there was like a 12-year-old kid that won that Legacy Classic in Indy not too long ago.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I mean, I'm just playing devil's advocate here. There has to be something done about this because it keeps
coming. I mean, there's devil's advocate and then there's wrong, Jerry.
Something has got to be done. It just keeps happening. Bannings aren't scaring people off from cheating. I mean, they're still brazenly doing it on camera.
It's because everyone has the mentality they're not going to get caught.
Yep.
Until they do.
If this wasn't being a streamed PPTQ, would you think this would a guy would have ever got caught? No.
Probably not. No.
Not one bit.
I mean,
like, if it was in the age of recording, do you think Bert and Chidi ever would have got caught?
Probably not. No.
Like, literally on one of the streams, the commentators commented, they're like, oh, that's weird that that's back in his hand, and they just brushed it off.
Right. Like, oh, I thought he only had two of those in his stack, or three of them.
I mean, it also happened when he was playing a modern tournament where he had Kira Great Glass Spinner in his opening hand in round one, and it was actually supposed to be in his sideboard at the time, and it got everyone questioning, like, what is this doing in his hand? This is game one. This is clearly in his sideboard. But they didn't do anything about it at all at the time. I mean, there's just nothing being done about it. Not enough. I don't know. It's
tough. I
think
one of the best things they can I think Watsi should formally say there should be, like, a replay. Like, NFL style, like, especially like Grand Prix and stuff where you're on a feature match or it's being recorded, that you can question something. Like, if the Tron player was like, I think he didn't, you know, cut my deck or whatever, he, like, just real quick be like, judge, check this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, and then there comes into play the judge himself. This is a PPTQ finals match. A judge is supposed to be sitting there watching you. Like,
I mean, realistically, it's a level two that doesn't care, and he's usually tired. It's the finals. He's like, just get it over with. You know what I mean? Like, he's sitting there. He's not paying attention, really.
Yeah, I think that's irresponsible, though. I mean, I get it that it's a long day, but you are getting compensated to some degree with cards and such to be able to do this. Pay attention? I don't know. I think we're just going to... Like, I think this is going to kind of loop back around where, I don't know, maybe I am being too harsh.
Yeah, you are. All right. I think the reasonable thing here is to instate some kind of, you know, check the tape policy.
Right.
Because, like, it even goes back to the Patrick Chapin incident where he accidentally put the card in his hand from a Johnny. And then, even though the only cards in his hand that it could be was that one, you know, based on creature and, like, where he put it in his hand, like, the judge usually could have went back to the tape and be like, oh, yep, you clearly put it right there in that hand, never shuffled it, you showed me which one it was. You know what I mean? You're like,
okay, yeah, that would have saved him from, at the time of the ruling, the game loss that he got. Definitely would have been helpful.
Yeah. And it would have helped, like, if his opponent, like, the Brad Nelson example, if he fetched a ghost quarter and his opponent was like, wait, how'd you get this ghost quarter? Like, you didn't play and you cracked the fetch. What did you get? And if he can't remember what he got, I'll go back to the tape. Oh, you fetched a ghost quarter.
And not only like, that, you used your hand to hide it. I mean, you tried to be trying to be cute with it, not get beat by Tron, because that's what Tron does. It, you know, magic and stuff.
No, so I would like some sort of policy like that, in my opinion.
I like that. Instant replay for all featured matches. Seems sweet.
Yeah, and it's not going to be everything. It's somebody questions something, you know, and make it easier too. Because, like, a lot of times a judge will come over and ask, you know, what's going on in this board state, and the players can say something. But if they have conflicting stories, the judge just has to be like, well, I think this one's right. You know what I mean? He just uses best judgment, which is right now he can actually just go back to the tape and be like, oh, yep, this is exactly what the board state was a turn ago. He can clearly look at it, see every card that was in play, and then go from there.
Okay. Yep. I like it.
Like, I mean, we're at the day and age where, like, especially at Pro Tours, the spotters at the table have iPads. And they you know, put the cards in to send them to the booth so they know what the cards are in hand. They can easily just pull up on that iPad, like, and rewind the match, like, a couple minutes and be like, this was the board state. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
But, all right, I think that's going to do us here, segment one. We're going to come back and talk about some brewing.
Ooh, brew.
Welcome back, everybody, for the second segment here. We're going to be talking about brewing strategies, kind of our process of how we go about brewing decks and things. This is actually suggested to us by a fan, Robert Chamberlain, here in Champaign, Illinois. Thanks for that. See, we do listen to you people, so give us feedback, all right? All right. So, Jerry, how do we start the brewing process? What's your kind of first steps? We'll give an example here. Kaladesh just came out. When a set just comes out, where do you go to first?
Me. All right. So first, I like to try to find anything that doesn't play me. This is me particularly. I try to find anything that doesn't play conventionally. In my case, I really hit the home run with Aetherflux Reservoir. So I looked at that card, read it a bunch of times, realized what it did, and then that was my starting point. I really just like picking a card that does something. From there, I build into it, and then the deck kind of builds itself at that point. Once you know that you're trying to get, in this case, I'm trying to get a 4-mana artifact out there that rewards me for playing multiple spells in a turn, well, then I want to play this artifact card. Well, what's the best way to find this thing? Well, Anticipate and Clint Nest Crane. Real solid ways to find pieces to this. This thing rewards me for playing multiple spells in a turn. What 0-mana spells exist in the format? Well, we got Cathar Shield, Bonesaw. You also have Endless One was something that came up. You know, Turion was a 1-drop. So then that came into question. Can I make artifacts cheaper? There were 2 cards at the time when I initially came up with this. You know, Herald of Kozilek. And, what's the card called again? The artifact
Foundry Inspector.
Foundry Inspector, exactly. So I go from a card, then I find out ways to find that card, and then I find ways to reward me for playing that card. Those are my 3 steps in building, at least in a brew in a brand new format.
Okay, so that's kind of building around 1 card. What do you like to do that, or do you like to look for synergies and things too?
I do. Smuggler's Copter was the real easy one for all of us to build. I mean
that's not a synergy, that's just powerful.
Red White Vehicles, even though the card is just plain powerful, let's take out the fact that it's powerful. There's synergy with this card. Dapala powers it up on its own. You know, Dapala finds it on its own. Veteran Motorist powers it up just for crewing it. So there is some synergies there, and synergies are important to find. And sometimes the synergies are just point-blank powerful. Like, you cannot deny that Red White Vehicles is just a silly, powerful deck. You know, Dapala also powers up these vehicles. Dapala also powered up, turns out, other dwarves. So we ended up getting Toolcraft Exemplar, and we ended up getting a copy. You know, Veteran Motorist gets powered up by it. You know, the synergy point is... sometimes that's just the best way to make a standard deck. It really is, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Also, on a side note here, why are you back to red-white? Boros is so sweet. Why couldn't you just have Boros aggro again, or you know, just Boros vehicles? Like,
what do you mean? What do you mean? I don't know where you're going with that.
Like, everybody just calls it red-white. Like, nobody's saying Boros anymore. Because it used to be like Boros Burn was the last... you know, Boros deck, and then before that was Boros aggro in the first Ravnica. Like, can we have Boros again? Why is it always red-white vehicles?
Because we're not in Ravnica, fam.
It doesn't matter. That's the color identity now.
I mean...
it's just like Teemer or, you know, Junk. Like...
good point. All right, I'll call it Boros vehicles from now on. You got me.
Yeah.
I'll buy that.
Yeah.
Like, we have names for things. Let's use them. I'm always a fan of that. So, Rob, you're kind of the mid-rangey ramp kind of guy. For the most part, you play like monsters and things like that. Yep. How do you go about building those kind of decks?
So I stick with red-green. I really enjoy the 2 colors. Occasionally, I'll splash here and there if I need to. But I take a look at, with this one, it was a rotation. So I lost with this set. And the big things I lost was I was on the like the red green Eldrazi ramp or the mono green Eldrazi ramp, and with now the new standard, I had to look into what big creatures can I get out quick. And so the first thing I'm looking for with this is what cheap ramp do I have. And we had a few ramp creatures. We have a Beastcaller Savant, we have Deathcap Captivator, we had Servant of the Conduit. Those were 2 drops that could tap for mana. And they're not
Riff Elf.
Right. Yeah, I want Elvish Mystic back.
Rip. Never gonna happen.
No.
R.I.P. But you're not gonna get Elvish Mystic the same way I'm not getting Wrath of God.
Yeah.
So, you know, I look into spells like that. I look into what non-creature spells there are. And right now, you have Attune with Nature, and then there's the three-drop instant you have, too, where you can put a land on the battlefield tapped. That's escaping me right now.
Natural Connection?
Yes, that's it, Natural Connection. And so you got those two, and then other things. The new Chandra, she adds two red. So I take a look at all of these and try to figure out what's going to be best for me. From there, then, I try to decide what my top end is, because I don't want it to be too large. It's standard. Sure, it's a little bit slower than some formats, but you can't be like, oh, I'm going to jam this this 8-drop, unless you're going to try to cheat it in like we've done with Ulamogs and Emrakuls and creatures like that in the past. Because if you wait too long to start getting out your big guys, you're losing the game, unless you have a good, almost control package in the beginning, which I don't have. And then there's the creatures then after that. What can I put out if my ramp is slow? So I need some smaller drop creatures. The two big creatures that drew me in were both Combustible and Verdurous Gearhulk. Amazing creatures in the two. Yeah. Combustible Gearhulk is a either card draw or it's going to be dealing damage. So that kind of wants me to lean more on a four of and four of when it comes to those two so that I can take advantage of the oh, discard three cards. Sweet. Okay, let's hope, you know, I can deal on average 7 to 10 damage. That's what I would hope for. So then I drew back, fell back more onto Chandra. She's all right. Torch of Defiance is okay. Hasn't seen a lot of play. I haven't had too much success with the deck on Magic Online. That's why you guys don't really hear me talk about it. It's just, it needs more work. The early creatures, you got things like Jotty Offshoot you could put in there. It's just life gain. It's an 0-3 wall. And then you have, in my opinion, probably the best 2-drop in Sylvan Advocate. Because it's either a 2-3 with Vigilance or it's going to be a 4-5 with Vigilance. So I look for the creatures to help out. And then the spell package was both Blossoming Defense and Built to Smash.
Yeah. I mean, and sometimes, too, like, certain archetypes just don't exist.
Right. Like, and
you know, Mono Red is not a thing right now, and, you know, Ramp is really hurting right now without, you know, an Elvish Mystic or even just a Rampant Growth effect.
Like, the only only Rampant Growth effect that you have requires you to play Wastes, which just feels really bad. Like, that feels awful.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just awkward.
But that was my initial process going in. That was the 60-card deck that I was eyeing up. And yeah, once I started playing, it just it didn't work out, and that's fine. So I've been feeling out for different decks with the Red Green Energy, the Colossus, Marvel Works, and it's interesting to see what's out there.
Yeah, for sure.
What about you?
As for like me personally, like I usually control, like that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at right now, and that's always just kind of like you look at. Do we have sweepers? Like, can we clean up the board? Because that's where we get a lot of card advantage. Do we have just straight draw spells? Do we have a divination in the format? And in this case, we have Glimmer of Genius, which is actually a very good card.
Yeah.
Just for instant speed, draw two. Energy's relevant because I'm main decking like Deadlock Traps and stuff. Then you also look at do we have a decent win condition? Torrential Gearhulk, like that card's just great. So like all the pieces are there. So then it just becomes you know what flavor do you want? Esper, Jeskai, just straight blue white. I personally just straight blue white still. Just for like a clean mana base, like I just always have double white, double blue when I need it. So that's been really nice. And kind of going into like broader strokes here, one thing I want to point out too is just key, and it's the thing I mess up most. Like when a set drops and I'm brewing, is read the card. Like I don't know how many times I've read a card and been like, oh, this card's great, it's just the best ever, and I'm like, I reread it, I'm like, oh, this doesn't do what I want it to do.
I know. If y'all watch our set review, I do that like 3 times. Like, I read a card one time. I'm like, this card's sweet. I get to do this. Someone in the chat's like, nah, fam, you don't get to do that. Like, oh.
Yeah.
Hype train derailed.
I was the same way with Nahiri's Wrath. I first read that card, and like, I missed the discarding X part, and then it's X targets. I thought I could just be like, oh, 3 mana, discard Embercool, 13 across, you know, 5 targets. I'm like, this is glorious. Like, the best board wipe ever.
Nope.
Yeah, it's one target for every discard. And I was like, oh, this kind of, that hurts. Because I had, like, this sweet reanimator deck. And I was like, yeah, this deck's great. I'm like, oh, nope. I can do 13 to one thing and kill it real good. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's big, too, is just read the card, like, double check it, make sure. Because, like, a lot of times, too, in, like, the early brews, you don't actually have the card. A lot of times, it's a proxy card, whether it's, you know, whether you're testing on Cockatrice because, you know, it's free and you can change decks like that because it is free and there's no investment. Or if you're just, like, Sharpie on the back of a card. Like, I have just a ton of Magic basic lands that have Sharpie all over the back of them. And, like, a lot of times I'll do that and then forget exact wording on something and I play it wrong. I'm like, oh, this is testing so good. Oh, it's because I've been cheating.
Because this card doesn't do what it's supposed to do. No!
Yeah, I forgot a keyword that I just missed the first time I glanced over it. Or, you know, small things like that. And I'm just like, oh, yeah, no wonder it's been testing amazing. It's because I'm playing a card that's better than it should be, you know.
We actually tried something kind of back on the whole brewing thing. You and me, Alex, you tasked me to find the most powerful, subjectively powerful cards in a vacuum in the format at different converted mana costs. And you ended up building a deck, right? Using that method. Can you explain that to me?
So basically what I did is, like, normally when I build a deck, I'm usually like, I pick colors first. Like, I want to play blue-white or, you know, like, I don't. This is the first time I've ever built a deck this way. And so it was interesting for me. It was kind of like a little thought experiment. I wanted your help with it. Where basically I just took all the cards at converted mana costs, like broke it up into the creatures, instants, you know, all the types. And went through and kind of narrowed down all the cards that are in the format and just kind of picked out what I thought were some of the best ones. And then double checked with you of just narrowed it down to what the exact best cards are at those converted mana costs. And as we were going through it, it was just Bant. Like, Bant just has the best cards at CMC, minus, like, Smuggler's Copter, which is free. So, like, everyone gets to play it.
We ended up
making a deck that was just Bant midrange with Always Watching and Smuggler's Copter. And then, like, Verdurst Gearhulk, Sylvan Advocate, Duskwatcher Cruders, you know, Reflector Mage, like... The deck is just pound for pound, like, all the best cards. And it plays very strong. Just the way it was built, we didn't value interaction very high. So it didn't have, like, you know, Declaration Stone or Stasis Snare. It didn't have any way to interact with the opponent other than, like, Reflector Mages or just being bigger than them and forcing them to block and stuff. So it had some flaws there. But other than that, the deck is very solid, and it's a real contender.
You built it with curve in mind, too. Like, didn't you build it to where, like, you had a specific number of ones, twos, threes, and so on and so forth?
Yeah, but that was also the way I wanted to build it, too, is I just wanted to be doing the most powerful thing it could at every stage in the game. I wanted to be, you know, mana efficient, like, as much as possible. Like, obviously, draw dependent and things like that. But, like, with the curve in mind, I wanted to be doing, you know, either a one drop or a tap landage, or the most powerful three drop. You know, two powerful two drops or like a powerful four drop and just curve up that whole way and do that and just try to outclass your opponent at every step of the game. And when it does those things in games, like, it's just dominant because of that, building it that exact way. So it was a really fun experiment for me, and I think there's something there, and I might go back to it too and, you know, actually, like, tone it down some and make it interact and actually make it more of a realistic deck. But, like, it was fun for me to build a deck that way. That's not normally how I build things. So that was fun. What do you think of that kind of strategy, Rob?
No, that is the best way, I would say, to get the power deck. Now, one big thing, too, is you have to think the most powerful card in a vacuum, that is all matter of opinion. So if, you know, Jerry and Alex just did this, if two other guys go out and do this, they're probably not going to get the same thing. They might have a couple cards in common and that their building strategy is going to be different. But this is a fantastic way, though, of just looking at a card as a card. Is this a good card or not? And then individually, yes. And then if you can get them together and it actually works out, that's fantastic. But like you said, though, you didn't really value interaction. And being able to value that interaction, unless you're quick enough or you just really think you're house enough, you need it. You really need that interaction, I feel.
Which is where Alex and I were when we put that list of cards together. You know, we were pound for pound trying to be super proactive, not interactive. Just, I'm going to play things that you have to deal with. Every single card you have to deal with. And there's just not enough cards in the format to do that. Which is where we went with that. And that's opinion-based, you know. There could be a control deck that someone decides to build on a curve like this and just goes pound for pound the best removal spells that you can possibly do with Torrential Gearhulk at the top. You know, that could be a deck. Like, who says I have to play Planeswalkers?
Yep.
I mean, the problem is I have so much backed up removal to kill Gearhulks, and there's no real good way to recur Gearhulks. Like, you need a good win con that is kind of endurant, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Like, it's harder to kill Planeswalkers Not as many people are on Ruinous Path and things, but
which is where we were. That's where we were with that. And that's where I was kind of on that, too. Like, Torrential Gearhulk requires me to play all these other cards that I don't want to play since we're already playing better things. So I kind of just went on, you know, we wanted to beat face when we built the deck this way.
Yeah. And it does beat face. Like, that's for sure. Like, it's sweet. And I might actually try to get it up on the website for everybody there of the deck list that we ended up with, and then maybe a more realistic one, add some interaction and things like that.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to getting your guys' mana base figured out, how do you do that? Because that seems to be one of, I would say, the most difficult things when you're brewing a deck now. So you got your creatures, you got your spells. How do I split my mana?
So that's actually it's super easy for me. And I'll tell you how I do it, Rob. So there's certain rules I always follow when I try to build a brew. If I'm building a controller mid-range deck, I'm at 25, 26 lands, depending on how high I go. If I have a 7-drop, it's going to be 26 lands. If I don't have the 7-drop, I'm at 25. And in aggro decks, I like 23, 24 lands. I'm at 24 lands if I have a 5-drop. If I don't have a 5-drop, I'll go to 23. I take all the colored mana symbols in all the cards you have and add them together, and I'll wind up with a number like, let's say 20 white symbols, 15 red symbols, and 10 black symbols for a deck. Well, I know that 20, 15, and 10, I need more white sources than I do red sources. I need more red sources than I do black sources, and I need twice as many white sources than I do black sources. From there, I use those percentages based on the number of lands I have. It tells me exactly what lands I need to put in this deck to fulfill my color requirements.
Yep, exactly. That's pretty much exactly the same thing I do, too. It's just all percentage-based of, you know, I have this many white symbols. You know, I want to try to get, you know, white's the dominant color, and by, you know, percentage margin, and then you just try to make sure that your mana base fits that.
Yep.
Like, I'm constantly, like, that's one of the first things I do, too, when I, like, net deck, is I go over the mana base. I'm like, all right, let's count up how many colored symbols we have and how many, you know, mana-producing lanes we have that produce this color and things like that, and I'll double-check mana base, just always.
Absolutely, yeah. I go total Frank Karsten on it. I will pull out the pen and paper, I will pull out the calculator, and I will figure exact numbers to what I should be playing.
That's always part of my brewing too.
Yeah, it gets super easy with a two color decks. Is real super easy. Like red white vehicles is pretty simple. I mean, it's a more white deck. So we ended up going 10 planes, 6 mountains, and then our 8 duels, which is absolutely fantastic. The real question that comes into play when it comes to mana base is, and we'll leave it to standard here, is Aether Hub. Like, is there any real value to playing a Tendo Ice Bridge in your deck if you're not an energy deck?
I don't think there is. A lot of people are on it. I'm not. I'm two color, and I'm not running any Aether Hubs.
Exactly.
I've seen a lot of two color running it. I'm like, that's just weird.
No, like, I don't like it at all.
Like, especially, like, there's not enough times that I have to have, like, a dual land untapped on one, because that's what they're essentially trying to do with it. Like, not enough decks actually want to cast two different colored one drops to for me to warrant that.
There is only really one deck that would want that, and that would be some Abzan mid-range deck where it's trying to cast, I don't know, some one drop of one color and then trying to cast a turn two Grasp of Darkness if you play the Aether Hub on turn two. Or you already had dual lands that were already fixing your mana anyways. An Aether Hub is only rewarding if you're an energy deck. Like, it becomes any land at that point if you're producing that kind of energy.
Yeah, exactly. I'm even in I have a lot of energy kind of left over with like glimmers and stuff, and my only real, you know, use for it is Deadlock Trap, but I still don't like Aether Hub.
Exactly. So
like a lot of two color decks are very like mana hungry. Like just look at like red white vehicles. You want to go white drop, white one drop into, you know, a red white two drop. Like, so like if you have an Aether Hub and you're like, well, I have to use this Aether Hub to get my white one drop. Well, now you can't get your red white two drop.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
It screws you all up. It definitely will screw you all up in all the bad ways. So Rob, what do you think about Aether Hub? Is it right? Is it wrong?
No, you guys nailed it. If you're making energy with the other spells you have, then sure. But if you're not, it has no business in the deck. Because you need to think worst case scenario, you're only going to get then that Aether Hub could have been the other color that you need. And now you're just drawing into the opposite color.
Sweet.
So now you're out on a color. So I look at it as worst case scenario. If I have that one Aether Hub in hand and one other land, if the rest of the hand looks great, you're going to be tempted to keep it, and it could end up being a bad keep. Whereas if it was a basic of the other color, or if it's a non-basic that you have, then of, you know, the duel, then you would have been fine.
Awesome. Yeah, so we are 3-0. 3-0 on Aether Hub. You heard it, guys, from the Snapcast.
I mean, the other deck that wants it too is things like Metalwork Colossus. Where like they're not very color dependent, and they actually want more colorless lands for things like Thought Not Seers in the sideboard and things like that. So where they can get away with it too.
Okay. So we are 3-0 on this. Basically, leave Aether Hub out of your non-energy decks and your non-Eldrazi decks. Leave it out of there.
Yep. There's enough mana fixing between like the Shadowlands and the Banjo lands that like mana fixing is still there.
Banjo lands?
As far as dual lands. Yeah.
Why are they called Banjo lands?
I forgot. I forgot the reason they're called Banjo lands, but they are.
Near.
All right then. So in modern,
there was a whole reasoning behind it, and I forgot why. And I don't even remember. But if you don't know, I'm talking about the check for two basics.
Yeah.
Lanes.
All right. So in modern, you know, we are all under the impression and the knowledge of fetch lanes are good because it thins your deck. So,
I mean, that's one of those things where, like, for the longest time, I've debated if fetch lands are actually necessary. And I've just never put the time into modern to try to figure it out on my own.
Okay, we'll say it's good. We'll say it's good then.
Yeah.
When is Evolving Wilds good to put in your deck?
Never. Modern.
Not modern.
Well, no, okay. Well, no, standard. Standard. Sorry, I should have prefaced that. Going back to standard now. When is Evolving Wilds good to be put in your deck? Because, right, Evolving Wilds has no place in Modern one bit.
It's good.
The only time I like Evolving Wilds is three-color decks, and then only sometimes. Like, if you're, like, a three-color deck and you have the Banjo lanes and can really rely on them, like, if you're in Bant, for example, like, Bant Humans ran Evolving Wilds because it had Canopy Vista and Prairie Stream. So, like, you wanted to use Evolving Wilds on turn one to you know, fix your colors and get a basic so you can play a basic on two and then just start playing all these Banjo lanes untapped. That's really the only time I like Evolving Wilds.
Exactly. I like it setting up where my other lands come into play untapped. Like, back in when the card was called Terramorphic Expanse, back when Buddy Lands were a thing, the old Rootbound Crag, Dragon Skull Summit, and all of them. That's when Evolving Wilds was super powerful because it got you that one basic you needed to make all your lands come into play untapped. There needs to be an incentive behind why I'm playing this Evolving Wilds to help myself out in the long run. If I'm just playing it to grab a land and the rest of my lands come into play tapped. Well, I'm just messing up. The deck thinning argument, yes, technically it does thin your deck. But if that were the case...
I mean, that's on like a hundredth of a... Like, it's super slim.
Exactly. Like, if it were relevant, why am I not playing fetch lands in Ad Nauseam? Why am I not playing...
Exactly.
Why am I not playing fetch lands in certain scapeshift builds? You know, they only play a limited number of them. We're not a solid 8 to 12 of them like they are in other decks.
Yeah. I mean, I think, once again, I think that's just a straight, like... Fetches are better in decks that want multiple colors fast, and they don't care about life. Like Suicide Zoo is a prime example of this. Like, it wants to lose life, and it's also a four-color deck. So fetches are great, because you just get to fetch two shocks, and you have all four colors. Like, decks that want that, or they really want, you know, to ensure they have double casting costs, like double red or whatever on turn two and that kind of thing. Like, Burn is another example that really feeds off of fetches, because it wants turn one mountain, turn two to have, you know, red and white mana, as well as, you know, green and white mana, as well as the red mana. So, like, those decks, it's a really good example of why they need fetches, but that's not for thinning. It's for other reasons.
Yeah. Thinning is really a non-argument. I mean, it's nice, but it usually doesn't pan out like that.
Okay. The only time I would say it would be really good to have the Evolving Wilds in Standard, I would say, well, really the best place for it would be Delirium.
Like, even then, it's a tap land, and they don't really want that.
The deck was already had the ability to put cards in its yard without the help of Evolving Wilds now. There's too many cards that incentivize the ability to take cards on top of your deck and put them in the yard. It's not a necessary evil like it was previous Standard.
Yeah, like, the Greenback Deliriums, I don't even think, are run Evolving Wilds right now, because they just have, you know, they can run Vessel of Nascency and mill a bunch, Grapple with the Past, Liliana Minus, you know, there's a lot of things that self-mill, and they can get lands that way. You don't have to play Evolving Wilds to get the land in the yard.
Okay.
Yep.
And also Smuggler's Copter is really great about pitching a land.
Yep. Yeah. And sometimes when the Hissing Quagmire dies, there you go.
Yeah, I actually... Just kind of like think about it. I don't think there's many decks in Standard that run Evolving Wilds right now. Like, I can't think of one off the top of my head.
Nah, mana's too good. It's not necessary right now. I know Red White Vehicles doesn't play it, obviously. Red Green Energy doesn't play it. None of the control decks play it. It's not necessary right now, because we have the duels and the fixing in the format to help us all out. However, the only deck that I could see doing it is if someone wanted to play a Ruin in Their Wake ramp deck, where turn one you Evolving Wilds for Wastes, which is the only fetch land that can find Wastes, so that you can play your turn two Ruins in Their Wake to actually get your Rampant Growth on turn three. That is a reasonable plan to some extent, but you have to make your deck better in other spots as well. Like, you need to be able to actually play a game of Magic if you can't hit it. But that's where I see where Evolving Wilds could be really good in Standard.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised there hasn't just been somebody that's just building a colorless deck, and they're just like, I'm just going to run 18 Wastes, whatever. there's always been potential for Walker the Wastes to just be a house in some deck.
Yeah.
Just nobody's pushing it. Maybe I'll mess with that. I don't know.
Well, we are almost coming up on an hour. Is there anything else we need to discuss this week?
No, I think that's pretty good for brew strategies there.
All right, take us out then, Rob.
All right, well, thanks again for listening, everybody. Please check us out at www.thesnapcast.com, where you can find all the latest in articles, podcasts, and YouTube videos we'll be posting. You can also find us on youtube.com/... We have the link. It's on our website. It's a whole bunch of random letters, numbers, capitalized, lowercase. facebook.com/thesnapcastmtg and twitch.tv/thesnapcast. You can find us on all of those venues. We should be able to get up our streaming schedule. I know I keep saying it, but everything keeps coming up. I had some major work things coming up that's really important for me. And after tomorrow, I will either be really good drinking or really bad drinking. We'll find out. And also, episode 52 is just 2 weeks away. You're going to want to stay tuned. Next week, we'll have big announcements for prizes and things like that, so that come episode 52 we can make those announcements. So stay tuned for that.
See y'all later.
Oh snap.
Oh snap.